liturgical year. Next week is the beginning of Advent, and we already have one foot in next year. We all know that the term king indicates a ruling monarch having some sort of authority. In some instances, it's been considered absolute, and many most instances not. Often it's used as an adjective. You know, anything relating to a king is considered big and important, you know, king size, that sort of thing. Since there are so few kings with any kind of substantial power in our society today, why use the term with regard to Jesus? Firstly, he did, as we noticed in the gospel passage this morning. He is the king, but his kingdom is not of this world, he said. And yet he is the only king with absolute power, truly absolute power. He is the sovereign. It's a power that our culture doesn't understand, and Pilate didn't understand it either. Pilate was to say later in the Gospel of John, "Surely you know that I have the power to release you, and I have the power to crucify you." And Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me were it not given to you from above." So Jesus mounted the cross. He showed Pilate and the whole world his power. But on the surface, his death seemed like weakness and failure. His followers, who had been revering him just shortly before, throwing palm branches before him, had all turned against him and cried out, "Crucify him, his blood be on us and our children," not realizing what a blessing his blood on their children truly was to be. He seemed to have nothing left, nothing. He was abandoned by his followers. He was crucified because one of those closest to him betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver. And the one he left or was going to leave in charge denied him publicly 3 times. There were just a few people at the foot of the cross, mostly women. And the only man who was there, the only apostle who was there, is the one whose gospel we heard this morning, St. John. The other day I was talking to my sister on the phone, and she was mentioning that my cousin, my 92-year-old cousin, is staying with relatives now in Walnut Creek. He lived in paradise for many years, and he's still in a state of shock. They've told him that it'll take 10 years to really get back to normal. But at 92, he said, he doesn't have 10 years. He fought in the Korean War, and he's been in difficult situations, but he was never, ever so frightened as he was just a few weeks ago. Those towering columns of trees on fire. A very frightening experience, and he didn't know that he was going to get out alive. He said that he never wants to live near trees again. So he left with his life, and whatever he had before is gone. I was watching a video on Channel 13 from Sacramento, an overview of the area there, and it's really pretty flat. It's devastated. It looks like the war was waged there. But my cousin is no poorer than Christ was hanging on the cross. In order to understand the kingship of Christ, we can't remain on the surface. We have to go in. To understand. And our culture is not likely to do that. Money is made on the surface, And so that's where all the attention is put. Not only that, to go in can be a frightening experience because we might not like what we find. And unless we are encouraged by his assurance of love for us, it can be a devastating experience. But it's the most important experience we have. Because when we go in, when we go into the spiritual side of ourselves, the inside, we find that the Holy Spirit is there already. Or we would never venture inside. We don't realize the power of the Holy Spirit in our lives. The fact that we're here this morning is a result of the Holy Spirit. Sent to us by Jesus himself. Remember so many times in the Gospels when Jesus speaks to people, they're attentive because he was so different from everyone else they had heard. He spoke with authority. But of course he spoke with authority. He's the author. They didn't understand that part, but they know that he spoke like no one else they had ever heard. But only those who were in tune with who they were, only the humble really let him in. The rest let his words remain on the surface. And that's still true. It is only when we are not full of ourselves that we make room for him inside. It's the only thing that works. Because it's what is. He is our sovereign. We exist at his pleasure. But he's not far away. He's as close to us as every beat of our heart. I remember when I was a child, I didn't like to hear my heartbeat. I was afraid I'd hear it stop. It didn't stop. It continues on without any explanation. But each beat of our heart is an assurance that we're here because he wants us here. Such a basic thing. You never hear about it. Science can't explain life or why the heart beats. It can tell you how it does it. But it can't explain what life is. The author knows, and he has authority over it. And one day, we'll be similar to my cousin in that we won't have anything. We'll have to let go of everything, including our life here on earth. But we will have him. If he has been our king throughout our lives, our sovereign, the one who matters more to us than anything, than even life itself, he will be ours and we will be his for all eternity. This is what we believe. This is what we say in the creed. He designed us for himself. And only he knows what makes sense. Only he knows, really knows what time it is. He delights in us. We get so caught up in what is wrong in the world, our own weaknesses and so on, we forget that there are places we can look that defy all of this. A few weeks ago, I was giving a retreat to the Dominican Third Order in Boise, Idaho. And I was invited to speak to a group of teenagers. It's a young couple. They're wonderful people. They have seven children of their own, and the youngest one is just weeks old. But they formed this group to learn apologetics, to be able to explain and defend their faith. And as a lure, they have a meal with them. And the most inexpensive and practical meal they could think of was spaghetti. So they call the group the combination of apologetics and spaghetti, which is apologetti. And they've been on the Catholic radio station, and I was impressed with them, the questions that they asked. And I asked them some questions, too. And I said, what is the most beautiful thing you have ever seen? And one girl raised her hand. The first one got it. She said, a baby. And I said, right on. There is nothing more beautiful than a baby, a human baby. They're so pure and innocent and good. They're how we start out. They're evidence of God's creating power. But just a matter of months before, they weren't at all. And suddenly there they are. And each one of us was one of those. And in God's eyes, each one of us still is. Just as this is true for their parents. Parents see us as the children they bore. I remember being in my 40s, and my sister and I were in the living room, and my mother and father were in the kitchen talking about us and referring to us as the kids. Because that's the way parents are. That's the way life is. And so when God looks at us, he sees the persons that he created and the good that he put in us that so often is camouflaged by age. But the goodness is still there. Not because we earned it, but because he put it there. And so on this feast of Christ the King, let us renew our allegiance to this sovereign God of ours who loved us enough to become one of us and redeem us with his own blood. He is the King of the world. Let him always be the King of our lives. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.